What happens when you discover that everything you believed about a beloved story was a carefully constructed lie? Margaret Atwood's The Blind Assassin opens with a suicide. Laura Chase drives off a bridge 10 days after World War II ends, and then spends the next 500 pages unraveling why. But this Booker Prize-winning masterpiece isn't just a mystery. It's a meditation on how we construct meaning from memory, how power shapes the stories we're allowed to tell, and how silence can be both survival strategy and slow poison. Iris Chase Griffin is 82, her heart failing, her time running out. From her cramped apartment in Port Ticonderoga, Ontario, she finally decides to tell the truth about her sister's death and the scandalous novel that followed it. Her narrative unfolds in fragments, memoir, newspaper clippings, obituaries, but the most compelling thread is the novel itself, The Blind Assassin, supposedly written by Laura before her death. The embedded novel depicts a wealthy young woman's dangerous 1930s affair with a fugitive radical, meeting in shabby rooms where he spins science fiction tales about planet Zykron, where blind children train as assassins and virgins face sacrifice. These stories within stories create a Russian doll effect, each narrative concealing another. We initially believe these lovers are Laura and Alex Thomas, the charismatic left-wing writer the Chase sisters once hid. But the devastating truth emerges. The lovers were Iris and Alex. Laura never wrote the novel at all. Iris crafted it as a memorial to her lost love, allowing the world to believe her dead sister was the author. This revelation forces us to reread every interaction between the sisters with fresh eyes. The novel becomes evidence, proof that Iris, not Laura, was Alex's lover, because only Iris heard these stories firsthand. The Chase sisters grew up in Avalon, named for King Arthur's final resting place, foreshadowing tragedy. After their mother's death and the Depression's devastation of their father Norval's button factory, 18-year-old Iris is sold into marriage with Richard Griffin, a wealthy industrialist who sees her youth and social standing as valuable acquisitions. This is a business transaction dressed in wedding lace. Richard is controlling and cold, his sister Winifred, a master manipulator who teaches Iris that grace comes from indifference. The marriage is socially sanctioned kidnapping, where the ransom is paid up front and the hostage must smile through dinner parties. Meanwhile, Laura, 8 years younger, ethereal and otherworldly, takes words literally and maintains an unshakable moral compass. As a child, she tried drowning herself in the river, believing her sacrifice might resurrect their mother, revealing both her capacity for self-destruction and her peculiar logic. When labor unrest erupts at the Chase factory, Alex Thomas becomes a fugitive. The sisters hide him in their attic before helping him escape. Laura falls in love with Alex's idealism. Iris falls in love with Alex himself. Neither sister knows about the other's feelings until it's far too late. During their secret meetings, Alex weaves science fiction tales for Iris about Sakiel Norn, where blind assassins serve cruel masters and young women are sacrificed on stone altars. These stories create a coded language for discussing forbidden topics: class warfare, political resistance, power, and exploitation. Through an imaginary world's safety, they speak truths too dangerous to articulate directly. One story centers on a blind assassin who falls in love with a sacrificial virgin he's supposed to kill. His blindness forces him to see her through touch, breathing, and warmth, a heightened perception that reveals her humanity in ways sighted people cannot. The parallel is clear. Iris and Alex's affair is also a kind of blindness, refusing to see the impossible obstacles society has placed between them. These embedded narratives serve as foreplay, political allegory, and prophecy. The science fiction elements reveal imagination as resistance. When powerless in the real world, you create other worlds where different rules apply. Alex's stories aren't escapism. They're rehearsals for revolution, testing ideas about power and freedom where consequences aren't immediately fatal. Laura returns after escaping Bella Vista, revealing something devastating. She had sex with Richard, believing this sacrifice would save Alex's life. She thought Richard knew Alex's whereabouts, and her submission would buy his silence. Iris, consumed by rage, tells Laura the truth. Alex was her lover for years, and he's now dead, killed in the Spanish Civil War. This revelation, delivered as punishment, destroys Laura. Within days, she drives her car off a bridge. The novel refuses simplification. Laura's sacrifice achieved nothing. Richard didn't know where Alex was. Both sisters love Alex but cannot save him. Both try protecting each other, but their protection becomes betrayal. Atwood's insight: we often hurt those we love most deeply, not despite our love, but because of it. Atwood maps Canada's social landscape from the 1920s through the post-war era with precision. The Chase Button Factory represents paternalistic capitalism. Norval refuses Depression-era layoffs. Richard Griffin represents modern corporate capitalism, viewing workers as disposable. Once married, Iris has no legal right to her money, household decisions, or her own body. Winifred wields power through social manipulation, teaching Iris the performative skills required of upper-class women: how to hide fear, deploy charm strategically, survive by becoming impenetrable. Class divisions permeate every relationship. The Griffins' Rosedale mansion versus Port Ticonderoga's shabby workers' homes illustrates how economic inequality shapes material comfort, education, healthcare, justice, and the right to tell one's story. When labor unrest erupts, workers burn Chase family effigies, their rage a response to generations of exploitation. The political backdrop, the Depression, the Spanish Civil War, World War II, shapes personal relationships concretely. Richard supports Franco's nationalists and Chamberlain's appeasement as bulwarks against communism. Alex fights for the Republicans in Spain, representing left-wing resistance. Their positions determine who lives, who dies, who has power, who must hide. The Blind Assassin is ultimately about who controls stories and how narrative shapes reality. For decades, Iris remained silent while Richard and Winifred spread lies about Laura, the novel, and Iris herself. This silence poisoned the next generation. Amy became an alcoholic who neglected her daughter Sabrina. Now, approaching death, Iris writes her memoir for Sabrina, raised on carefully constructed lies. The memoir is Iris's final rebellion, refusing to let the powerful control the narrative after she's gone. She hopes truth, however painful, will free Sabrina from family mythology. But Atwood leaves uncertain whether Sabrina will ever read it, reflecting the novel's themes about communication across barriers of time, convention, and fear. In a world valuing convenience over complexity, The Blind Assassin reminds us that truth is rarely simple and never comes without cost. Iris's memoir is both an act of love for her sister, for Alex, for the granddaughter she barely knows, and defiance against a society that silenced women. The novel's nested narratives become a meditation on storytelling's power and limitations. Newspaper clippings distort private truths. The embedded novel reveals what cannot be spoken directly. Iris's memoir attempts to set the record straight, yet she acknowledges memory's unreliability. The only way you can write the truth is to assume that what you set down will never be read. Atwood shows us that some truths take a lifetime to articulate, that silence can be both survival strategy and slow poison. The novel asks, what do we owe the dead, the living? When is silence protection, and when is it complicity? Iris's final act reminds us that breaking silence, even when too late to save ourselves, might still save someone else.